Welcome to my little talk about teletext, this time with two T's. Essentially, there often has been an idea to give written information wirelessly to people, to have some sort of wireless paper, like you have radio or television. In the early days, you had essentially variations on telefax. So you had a special receiver which would have a pen writing the image on a piece of paper, and the image would be received via radio, for example. This has been tried many times ago. It never actually got somewhere. The most common version of this actually was WeatherFax, which is even still transmitted today, where you can tune into a shortwave frequency and get a weather map at fairly high resolution, which would traditionally be printed out. Of course, today it's just on a screen of a computer. So this is essentially how you did it before you could store video economically. There was a Japanese idea to store a whole field or frame of video onto a disk recorder. This is like a hard disk or a floppy disk. This technology has been in use for television since the 1960s and has been used for trick play. It was very expensive, but just like with the videotape recorder, there was apparently some hope to make this cheap so you could have it at home. And you would essentially have a complete television channel, which would have, for example, 60 frames, which it would constantly cycle through. And you would have your hard disk recorder, which would record the page you wanted to see and would display it on your TV screen. This was, of course, very inefficient in terms of bandwidth, as you would need a complete television channel just to display teletext or some form of teletext. It could also do graphics, of course. So I don't think anybody ever actually tried this. However, in the 1970s, it seemed economically to have a digital computer terminal, essentially a text terminal, which could store a page full of data, so it could be refreshed 50 or 60 times per second, which meant that you had to store those characters somewhere. So you need about 7,000 bits of to store around 1,000 characters. In the early days, RAM was too expensive for this, and it was fairly exotic. You couldn't just buy RAM chips, and even if you could, the overhead of the addressing inside the RAM chip meant that they were fairly expensive. You had to spend, if you only have 1,000 or 1,024 bits on a chip, you would have to spend a lot of logic to address those 1,024 bits. So what people had were shift registers. A shift register is much more easy to build. You essentially just have the same amount of logic. You can just put in a long row or snake it along a chip, and you need to clock it, and you can always only get the bit at the end, and you can only feed in one bit. But that's actually fine if you want to generate a video signal. So those early video terminals, for example, on the Apple I computer, used shift registers. You have two shift registers here, one long, which stores the whole screen of text, and a short one, which stores a line of text. You need both, since every line of text consists of multiple scan lines. For example, you have 8 scan lines per line of text, which means that you need to have the same character codes at your character generator for every one of those 8 rows or 8 lines. Therefore, essentially what you do is you cycle around those 40 characters, or whatever the width of your terminal is, in this shift register, And every time you want to have a new line of text or the next line of text, you shift in those 40 characters from the large shift register. So you shift it in, cycle it 8 times around, and shift in the next 40 characters. Now, if you want to build a normal computer terminal from this, you can only add characters while the large shift register has shifted in the character you want to change. So you cannot just at any time access any character in this storage, but instead you can only access the character which is just being returned into the shift register. So you can build computer terminals with this, but you can only change one character per field. Now, that would take quite a while to update such a screen. So in teletext, you have whole packets of 40 characters. Now, and those are transmitted in the blanking interval. We will see this later in detail, but you have a whole row of characters, which you can then shift into this line shift register with 40 characters. And when you are in the blanking interval or in the normal picture interval, you can, it only works in the blanking interval, but if you are in the blanking interval, you can just rotate this register for all 1,000 positions. And when you are at the row, you just stored the incoming row at the position you want to insert this. You can just shift it out here into the large shift register, which allows you to update a whole row at a time. So you could transmit, for example, one row per field or frame, and you still wouldn't need to have expensive RAM, which is probably the reason why some things in teletext are the way they are. So obviously, times have changed since then. So in the 80s and 90s, typical teletext decoder looked like this. And this is actually about these. Every block here is about a single chip. You have your data slicer, which turns your video signal into bits, which was for quite some time a separate microchip because it had to handle analog things. And you have an integrated teletext decoder, which essentially has everything inside except for the RAM and the microcontroller, which is used to select the page. So in principle, a teletext decoder chip could work by its own, but you need to tell it what page it needs to display or what page it needs to store and such things. In fact, many computer applications replace this microcontroller with the computer. And you can, for example, do ways of telesoftware via teletext by instructing the teletext controller to wait for a certain page and store it in RAM, and then read out this RAM into your microcontroller. So many of the data services on teletext were designed to be a page of teletext, which should not be viewed by a normal user, but which the computer could access and then download into its own memory. So let's look at a signal in more detail. I have forgotten. The current generation of teletext decoders is essentially just a piece of software, often running on a Linux computer or at least running on some chipset. There's no hardware support for this anymore. It's also not needed because you can easily emulate it in software. So now let's take a typical video signal with teletext. So this is a video signal. it displays all the rows of all the lines of video in one continuous strip. And now we are going to remove the image data, this fancy animation. So it's removed now. And we can see that there's some structure in this data. Every line in this image represents one teletext packet. And we can see here that there is a clock run-in sequence of ones and zeros, which determines the phase and frequency of the bit clock. Essentially, a decoder needs a crystal oscillator, and it needs this burst to be able to find the bits. And the sequence here of, I think, 3 1s, 2 0s, 1 0 0 is used to determine when the data will start. Then we will see this part, which is the teletext, packet address. It's 8 bits encoded as 16 bits with Hamming coding and error correction and such, which we will see soon. And then here we have data where we can see a kind of 8-bit structure with those horizontal lines. This is the actual text inside the line. So we can now decode that data. This fancy animation. So we see the packet address in yellow, which is divided in two fields. One field is the so-called magazine number, and the other one is the row number. The magazine number also determines the first digit of the page number. You can essentially, also the teletext, the magazine number essentially divides the teletext stream into 8 independent streams, which can be transmitted independently. So I guess they did it because in those early decoders where you could only transmit one line or one packet per frames, you could then actually transport 8 packets per frame, or 8 lines and 8 lines of text, but in different magazines, and your decoder would only care for the magazine number it was the user selected. In fact, this was commonly done in the UK, where you could transmit where there were user visible magazine streams. So what we also see here is that we have color. On normal terminal standards, we are used to having non-spacing attributes. Essentially, that means that you can have some sort of escape sequence, which may be very long for color. And this would not be displayed on the cursor. It would not move the cursor. However, since we have such a rigid structure where we only have 40 characters per line, and we do not have a separate attribute memory, there is another way to transmit attributes. And this is shown here with those smaller characters, which take up one character cell. Those are the values inside of that character cell. Essentially, since ASCII only uses character cells 32 and above, the character cells before are used for special control characters, which, for example, can set the color. For example, this 06 tells the decoder to switch to text and cyan. 14 is to switch the teletext decoder to switch to blue and graphics. And you can also, I think this is for setting the foreground color to the background color, and this is to set white, this is to set cyan, and so on. So you can have all extreme RGB colors. It's simple to do RGB colors from black to white, yellow, magenta, cyan, and so on. We also see that there are lines with the row number zero. Those are header lines. Essentially, the header line contains not only the text we see here, which is displayed to the user, but also the two last digits of the page number and a four-digit subpage number. So if you have used Teletext before, you probably know those subpage numbers. When you have page 5 of 7, you would have 0005 in here. You also have some flags which you need to use for things like subtitles. Here we have a special row of magazine 8, row number 30, which is outside of the normal range used for teletext. This is a row which does not belong to a page, but is an extra data stream that is inserted. In this case, it encodes not only a so-called status display, in this case the name of the station, but also an identity of the television channel, I think 15 bits or 16 bits or something, as well as the modified Julian date and the UTC time and the UTC time offset. So you could, for example, have a device which would set its clock to the teletext data, for example, a videotape recorder or something. What we already see on the ground, on the lower part of the image, are frames which are header frames for the page number FF. Whenever you do this, this is defined as a filler packet. So these will be displayed by your teletext decoder if you search for a page, but they can be inserted at any time. What we see here is a subtitle page. As you can see, it's similar. You have the same header row, row zero, but here you have some flags in the subpage number, and not all lines are transmitted. In fact, you do not need to transmit all lines on a teletext page. If you you can select whether to have the previous page displayed, so you can update certain lines of text in your teletext data, or you can choose to delete the previously stored page. And this is also why we have filler packets here, because the specification recommends that in between a header row, which has the flex set to delete the page, and the first row of the packets, then has to be about 20 milliseconds to give the decoder a chance to delete its memory. And so this is at the bottommost row, teletext line of one field, while this is at the topmost line of the next field. So you essentially have a full video field in between, which gives the decoder time to decode, to erase its memory. In fact, so you can transmit any kind of data, but since in Germany we do not use multiplexed teletext, most stations fill this up with some filler packets. In fact, we will see later in ZDF that they actually even have product placements there. Oh, now the end of the animation runs through. This was, by the way, created with the same data we saw earlier in the first animation. This was captured via a digital oscilloscope from the video output of a digital satellite receiver decoder. Oh. Now we can look at actual teletext data. So in this display, you can see the packet address for every packet. First the magazine number and then the row. We have here a fairly normal page with this is subpage 001. And this is essentially a normal page without any special features. It starts with its header page, then 23 rows, and that's all. What you have here is a special page with a hexadecimal number. Those can be used for a variety of uses. One is, for example, to define characters or to have any kind of computer data you want to have. So this is, for example, what ZDF Text did in 2011. They had when they wanted to fill data, they had an independent data service, which coincidentally contains the words FAB Teletext System. FAB is the manufacturer of teletext systems, at least for standard definition television. And yes, this probably is product placement. I'm not sure if they got any money from this. As you can see, this is quite often. So what we also have here in the we have this page enhancement data. This is essentially the idea when Teletext Decoder got RAM with level 1.5. And RAM typically was not 7 bits wide, but 8 bits, you could invoke special characters. So here we have an example. This page 841 is subpage number 2. Contains page enhancement data. And that's, first of all, page enhancement data is transmitted as packets with row number 26. It's magazine number 0, which is also magazine number 8. It's just a 3-bit field, and they used 0 to transmit 8. Because apparently people didn't want to have a page 0. And this now contains two elements, which are encoded as triples, which are three character position, which is 8 bits each, which encode 18 bits. It's a bit strange, but yes, it can have either a row or a column address, which is defined by the address field, which can either be below 40 or above 40, which defines if it's a row or a column, and the mode defines what kind of commands this should be. In this case, we have an active set active position to row 5, and here we have for column 9, the invocation of a G0 character, the E, with an acuité, or however that's pronounced. So if you look here, we have row 9, column 9. So, ah. sorry, row 5. So we have Demisier, which should be written with some accent over one of the E's. This is actually only necessary for pages which are for characters which are not in the language of the page. Every page can transmit language in 4 bits, I think, and your teletext decoder would then decode the characters in that language. But if you had special uses, for example, a name outside of your language, you could override it this way. In fact, for example, you with a grave in row 7, probably says Helu, however that's pronounced. And you can also have quite a lot of such things. You can set the foreground and the background color to even extreme values for page 1EE. I think this is a page used for defining objects to be displayed. In fact, more modern teletext decoders can overlay special objects over your level 1.0 or level 1.5 page. So level 1.0 and level 1.5 is the old teletext, which just uses the rows and doesn't override any character, or 1.5 does. But in 2.0 and 2.5, which are the more modern teletext standard, you have elaborate ways to override certain parts of your image. So this is how today high resolution graphics are done. We have something special. We have page enhancement data, which is used to transmit. It's not on this page, but there are, for example, if you go to a program guide. Here we have a program guide which contains, in this case, below the page, or not even here. In any case, it's possible to transmit semantic data, so your videotape recorder could parse your program guide, and you could then select a show via the teletext page, and you would be able to program this with a few number of clicks. So that's actually the end of the prepared part, or more or less prepared part of my talk. So now we could go into a more interactive session. So if there are any questions, or if anybody would like to see parts of the teletext signal of ZDF or other stations, but I only have ZDF unpacked at the moment, feel free to ask.
Well, first of all, thanks for the presentation so far. I think what would be interesting is maybe if you have some information on like who actually specified it, and so if you have any input on that, I would be interested in hearing that.
So as far as I can say, the earliest specifications came from Philips in Eindhoven, in the Netherlands. I'm not sure exactly what laboratory it is. That's also where they got the basic idea. Then as far as I know, this was mostly specified by the BBC and ITV. And they had slightly competing systems in the 1970s. In fact, the standards even changed between the 1970s and now. This was also a time when you couldn't buy actually a teletext decoder, so you actually had to build your own teletext decoder. It was all extremely experimental, and there are in fact even podcasts about the people who worked at those early experimental teletext services, like I think the Bai Tai podcast has quite some episodes about the teletext people behind it. However, probably was more and more defined by manufacturers and also television stations. Every television station has essentially their own flavor of teletext. For example, today, the original British stations had strict packet magazines. So you would, I guess most people know how it was in Germany, or still is, if you selected a page and you had to wait, you would see all the pages from 100 to 899 running through. And if your page would come around, your teletext decoder would display it. However, in the original version in the UK, your teletext decoder would only show you the pages of your current magazine. So all eight magazines would be transmitted in parallel, and you would only see the page numbers of your current magazines going through, much slower than in Germany. But since you had eight magazines, you still could access your page fairly quickly. And this was, as far as I know, done until they stopped. So this is one regional variant. There's also today teletext services like München TV, which is a local station for Munich, which actually does not use subpages. So every page is subpage zero. And they also do a bit of tricks with updating only a few rows. So if you access, for example, I think page 100, the index page, you will see text scrolling through a line scrolling through your television screen. In fact, this used to be a lot more common in the heyday of teletext. For example, Sat1 used it on their children's pages to have a train going through, and those are special things people did with their teletext services. I have no idea how flexible those systems were and how much you could actually do this, but you can kind of abuse and extend those services quite a bit, and the standards. And I mean, level 2.0 and 2.5 probably came from the industry, as they had quite some investment in bildschirm text. All the features introduced in 2.5 teletext actually were previously introduced into bildschirm text, the German online online service via the telephone line. And my guess is that since they already had to develop all that hardware, and since by the 1990s, there were finally highly integrated chipsets for bildschirm text, they just used that IP and added it into teletext decoders. So starting from around the mid-1990s, level 2.5 teletext decoders became available, which suddenly offered more colors as well as user-definable characters for high-resolution logos and all kinds of things. You could also set the background color for a whole row, not just for the area your teletext decoder displays, but also the range left and right of it and such things. So there were probably a lot of people and a lot of companies contributing to that standard. When they started, RAM was extremely expensive, and now we have gigabytes of RAM, which can be used for all kinds of things. There even was an experimental service in the UK to transmit audio commentaries for the blind via teletext. Since teletext has quite a bit of a bit rate or data rate, you can actually use it to transmit intelligible speech. So it probably wasn't good, but you had something like 9,600 bits per second, which was enough for speech. It says a question from TNT. You mentioned in a field in the header had some error correction encoding 8 to 16 bits. Does the rest of the payload also have some error coding or detection? Oh, yes. Every character is actually just 7 bits, and the 8th bit is there to for odd parity. So you can decode, so you can detect errors, and some decoders will even remember what characters were defective. And if the page would come along again, they would overwrite only those defective characters. So you could have, if you only have one, if you display one page and your connection is very noisy, you would have less and less errors. This was, for example, important when you wanted to watch Austrian teletext from Germany, where you often had a very, very, very weak signal. There are also other, this 8 to 16 bits encoding is actually twice a 4 to 8 bit encoding, which is quite common in teletext. Among this, there's also an 18 to 24 bit encoding, which is used for the triplets for the page enhancement data. So you still would have some sort of error correction and checking. But the most was done on the magazine, on the packet address, because if you decode the packet address wrong, you will have a line from a different page on your page, and that's certainly not desirable. Will the teletext signal survive a VHS recording, especially VHS? Well, yes, almost. As there are people actually trying to decode the data from the videotape recorder. It actually depends on your system. Obviously, if you have a full resolution videotape recorder, for example, Type-C, quadruplex, or something like this, D2, it would just record it fine, and playback would be fine. However, particularly with color under systems, you have two problems. First of all, the bandwidth is filter already attenuates the teletext signal quite a bit. And then second, so you need to do equalizing to get it out again, which of course will add noise to your signal, which means more bit errors. So people actually try this and they try to decode. Since pages are transmitted typically several times in a video recording, you can kind of try to find out which bits were defective and repair them and run spell checking over your pages in the hope to recover more of it and such things. There's also a second problem with band-limited videotape recorders, and that's something called crispening. In order to still make the picture look good subjectively, they use a non-linear circuit which would peak any transition which is above a certain threshold, and this totally destroys teletext data. But this is only on playback, so if you can turn it off, for example, by setting the sharpness knob to the lowest possible setting, if you have one on your videotape recorder, you can probably still decode it more or less. You could, in theory, also decode it from the data stored on the tape directly without the signal processing of your videotape decoder. I want to try this. I already have the hardware for this, but I haven't done it yet. Vesa actually says a British teletext archive which displays such recovered pages. So it's not very good, but you can read things again. What is a bit clock? Well, the bit clock is, and I can only remember it as a multiple of the line frequency. It's 444 times the line frequency. So it's 444 times 15.625 kilohertz, which is around 6.3 megahertz, if I'm not if I'm correct. So if you have a videotape recorder with 3.5 megahertz bandwidth, it should just about be able to record it. But again, you need to do a lot of equalizing. There's also a bit of problem because on the lines in the blanking interval, the timing error of a typical videotape recorder will be very bad because of geometric reasons and such. So the timing error will be bad anyhow. So your normal decoder might not be able to lock onto the bits. Oh yes, the setup is actually it's actually fairly simple, at least conceptually. I have a digital storage oscilloscope, which can store 25 million samples, which is not a very fancy oscilloscope. And a few years ago, a decade ago, this would have been unimaginable. Well, I connected it to the satellite receiver. I set the amplitude so it would look nicely on the screen. Then I set the oscilloscope to capture 25 million samples. Then I hit the trigger start button. I waited a second for the data to be stored. I sampled it at 25 megahertz. Then I connected a USB hard drive to it and select the store to hard drive. Then I had to wait several hours, after which I had a file on the hard disk, which was in some proprietary format of the oscilloscope. However, the data itself is just in there in binary. So I converted it via SOX, the audio pocket knife for all kinds of stuff. I converted it, I think, to 100 megahertz, so I could detect the position of the sync signal, or in fact, for this data, even the bit clock. Then I arranged it again and turned it into a picture, or to be more precise, into a data structure which had the same number of octets per line. And this was then, with a bit of C code, translated into pictures for the animation. Essentially, wrote out a portable gray map image or a portable bitmap image, then converted into PNG, stored the next frame, converted it to PNG, and so on. And did the animation, and for the text display, actually I used for the animation with the text, I decoded those lines so they could be displayed. The display in the terminal actually comes from a different source. This is decoded from DVB-S. Many video digital video recorders will actually store this along with the picture. And I have collected quite a bit of them. In fact, I even have three computers which constantly tune into transponders, either two of them on satellite and one on DVB-T2. And they just store the whole teletext program and sort the packets a bit so they are a bit smaller and you do not have as many redundant packets. And I typically upload this once a year to archive.org. So if you want to play with teletext data, you can find it on archive.org. So you finished two VHS recorders by watching this talk very nicely. I need to fix my video to 2000 recorder. The one tape broke in it and it damaged the sliding contacts for the head drum. And this one in particular takes some timing pulses from via an optical sensor from the head drum, since that's not properly aligned. So I need to do this on mine. But yes, if you have a VHS recorder which has the head signal on some kind of output, you can probably, there are the successors of the BT8X8 cards can actually be switched into an AD converter mode. I haven't tried this myself, but if this works, it should be fairly easy to just decode the data from the heads. I have actually done this experimentally with an oscilloscope, but you only get something like 1 second. And that's, you can see the pictures. They are not yet color in the setup I've tried, but it should theoretically be possible to also get teletext from those. I hope my talk wasn't too so boring that you had to do something else during it, like fixing videotape recorders. By the way, there's also a very nice YouTube channel called Tech Story of a guy from Czechia who fixes full band videotape recorders. There are some videos on him fixing IVC 9000 videotape recorder. There were only about 69 made. Said to be the best analog videotape recorder.